welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm a little bit disappointed. Feel a little bit betrayed.
Oh.
I
was hoping you wouldn't find out, but okay.
Well, you know, you and I are technically millennials. Or it's, I think that it's sometimes it's called technically millennials or geriatric millennials.
Sure.
But we,
you know what, that second one resonates more.
We technically fall into the millennial generation.
Yeah.
And I, we haven't talked about a movie journal yet because we haven't done a movie journal in like a month almost. So I don't even know if you've seen this movie, but I loved Ridley Scott's The Last Duel.
Oh, okay.
So imagine,
I've not seen it yet. Okay. I saw the other Ridley Scott movie this year.
Which I have not seen yet, but will have seen by the time we do another movie
journal. Good, because I really want to talk about it with you.
All right, we'll talk about it on the next movie journal when that is.
Yes.
So imagine my betrayal when I find
I
out that Ridley Scott on Mark Maron's podcast blamed millennials for The Last Duel's poor box office performance because of a short attention span. But here's the thing. Because this actually gets to a bigger thing that I've heard. There was a tweet recently where someone, before this even happened, someone referred to Ridley Scott as a, like, lumped him in with, like, boomer directors. Ridley Scott was born in the 30s. Ridley Scott is not a boomer. Words mean things.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And also, if you read the full transcript of what he said on Mark Maron's podcast, he's talking about what we now call, like, Gen Z or whatever.
Right.
Again, words mean things. You can't just say, like, everyone who's over the certain age that I don't like is a boomer, and then the old people say everyone under a certain age that I don't like is a millennial. Like, there are the generations. We do this for a reason. Like, we lump these things together for a reason to sort of mark, like, epochal changes in the way that people are raised, the way people relate to the culture. There's a commonality between these things. So, whether or not Ridley Scott is right that Facebook and other apps and
TikTok.
And TikTok, yeah, which he probably said Facebook because he probably doesn't even know what TikTok is.
Of course
is.
Not, yeah.
And he's also, that's another thing, like, listeners who heard me and Scott on the podcast last week, by the way, thank you, Scott.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
We talked about the idea, that percentage of life thing, as you get older, a short period of time feels shorter because it's a smaller.
Yes.
And, like, maybe to Ridley Scott, like, the term millennial is still new, even though it's been like over a decade.
Yeah.
But he's 80 something or whatever. How old is he? He's gonna be almost 90.
He's gotta be. Yeah.
Well, I said he was born in 1937, so he'll be 90 in 6 years. So he's in his,
okay. He's in his eighties,
early to mid eighties.
Well, and also, I mean, I didn't grow up hearing the term millennials applied to myself. I feel like it only is a term that I became aware of.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. Just because I became aware of it recently doesn't mean it hasn't been used.
And that's the thing, like, what we now call, our friend Emily Vanderwerf wrote a whole thing about this. Mm. Like, what we now call Gen Z it'll end up being called Gen Z,
right.
But it might grow into its own name as they,
sure.
as they come,
sure.
like become adults and stuff. And that's what happened with millennials. Like, we were, I remember being referred to as Gen Y because we were the generation after Gen X.
Sure.
I became millennials when I was like in my late 20s because I'm the oldest millennial. You and I are essentially the oldest.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, I usually see 82 to 96, but I've also seen like 80 to 96. So it doesn't really matter. The point of whether or not we're millennials isn't the point. It's the idea of just lumping together everyone above or under a certain age as this thing that I don't like.
Yeah, and it's tough because I'm sure for. I think you mentioned this already, this idea of not quite realizing that another generation has come along.
Yeah.
And it snuck up on me certainly once I was a teacher and I realized like, holy shit, like I'm teaching some people and I'm not trying to like look down on anybody, but it's more just like for a while I was like, oh, I know some people for whom the internet was always a thing. And then I realized like I'm teaching people now who were born well after 9/11.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like they were, you know, I think back and it's like, oh damn, you and I were born during the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
I'm teaching people that were born in the Obama administration. Yeah. 'Cause again, I'm teaching high school freshmen getting college credit. And like, that's nuts to me. Like,
yeah.
I think of these milestones and of course, and then of course people that are older than us would say, oh, they were born after the, you know, man walked on the moon and stuff like that. So I do recognize that everybody has that, but because of that, it's anytime there's this new crop, I say anytime, it's only been the once for me, but it's going to happen more. Anytime there's a new crop, it's like, cause yeah, I think I probably thought of millennials as people that are currently in their teens and twenties. Like, oh no, that's, I guess 96, they'd be 25 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So the youngest millennials are 25.
Yeah.
Okay. But do you feel like you have anything in common with a 25-year-old right now?
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right, sorry. I forgot who I was asking.
I'm very young and hip. I remember, speaking of that percentage of life thing that Scott and I talked about last week, I remember in 2000, or I guess January 2001, when George W. Bush was sworn in, that setting politics and my preferences aside, just the fact that Bill Clinton was not the president anymore was so weird to me.
Yeah.
Because he had been the president for as long as I had like spent any time thinking about who the president was.
Yeah.
You know, that 8 years from like 9 to 17 is way more formative than the 8 years for me that Obama was president.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. It's, and I also think in terms of like, I was watching an old episode of The Simpsons. I was watching a Halloween episode. I think it might have been, oh yeah, it was the 96 episode, and it features Bill Clinton and Bob Dole.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, politically or culturally, when is the last time anyone thought of Bob Dole? And then I realized like, oh yeah, there was a time when the word Dukakis meant something. And it's just crazy to think of that. And similarly, I'm sure people will think of like John McCain, like the also rans. I think at this point it's arguable whether Al Gore is relevant.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, obviously, like with the movie and all that, I think that helped. But I don't know. I feel like even he's faded a little bit.
You know, we got to get to the episode, but so I actually think about Bob Dole quite a lot because I think about in 1996 how one of the like marks against him in the campaigning was that he was so old. He's still alive.
He's still around. And
but he would have been in his early 70s.
Yeah.
Then, cause he's almost 100 now, I think.
Meanwhile, the most recent election, was between two old guys.
Yeah.
Very old guys. But,
I got some thoughts about the way we can shake up this system. I think people aren't ready.
A little lethal, I think.
Before we move on to the tweakedaudio.com ad, yes, it's coming. Calm down. Be patient. We got some new postcards from Peter. They're both from Seattle, a place where I have visited. One is from the Timberline Lodge in Mount Hood, Oregon. Okay, the postmark is Seattle, but the Timberline Lodge in Mount Hood, Oregon. They're both from that. This one's got a snowcat.
Snowcat, yeah.
What does a snowcat do?
I mean, it travels easily over snow, but I'm sure it serves a function as far as maybe plowing or something like
that. Yeah, it just doesn't look like there's anything like a plow on it. I don't know. Anyway, okay. Peter says, my wife and I did a motorcycle ride around Mount Hood just outside Portland, Oregon, where exterior shots in The Shining were filmed. During the trip, we saw No Time to Die, and it got me thinking. You know, like Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Of the oldest action movie trope, the concept of the henchman. Bond kills dozens of armed guards in their are, see the stamp is over here. They're something throughout the villain's lair. Why do singular bad guys always have such a large staff? Do they share his vision for taking over the world, holding humanity hostage? Are they in it just for the paycheck? Did they get fired from Walmart and couldn't get it hired anywhere else? What are your thoughts on disposable, expendable supervillain supporting staff?
You know,
weirdly, I have a thought.
Okay, go ahead.
Which is, I mean, this is going to sound like I'm just lifting the Simpsons, like the Hank Scorpio thing.
Yeah.
But I have a thought of like, oh, these people worked for a company mm-hmm. that got bought out by like a Jeff Bezos style, like,
sure,
you know, multi-billionaire supervillain. Like the frog in the frying pan, just one day they look up and they realize that I'm no longer doing data entry. Like, why do I have this weird uniform?
And maybe they've been paid in like company stock. Okay, and so like, oh boy, here we go.
Script.
Yeah. Boy, if you're Jeff Bezos and you're like, oh, I'm the richest man in the world and I'm bald. This is real Lex Luthor territory here, and I need to make a choice about how I dress, how I present myself, wear a toupee, although I guess Gene Hackman wore a toupee in the first Superman.
That's true. That's true.
But,
no, I feel like he's like going up to space, and like, I feel like he's like leaning into the supervillain.
That's true, yeah.
Image.
And you know what? It's one of my favorite moments. It's a very Shane Black moment in Iron Man 3. Did you see Iron Man 3?
No, I never did.
There's a moment where, you know, Iron Man and War Machine are raiding like a compound, and they're just, you know, decimate. I don't think they're killing any of like the henchmen, but they're taking good care of them. And then there's one, like, essentially there's a room full of guys, and Iron Man just like takes them all out except one who's got his gun, and he just drops it. He goes, you know what, I forget exactly what he said. He's like you know what, it's not worth it. These guys are so weird. And he just walks away. And it's like that, like the phrasing of that is a very Shane Black kind of thing. But this idea of like, after certain points, like, I don't think I'm going to win this one. I think it's not worth this.
Do you ever see the deleted scenes from the first Austin Powers movie? Has that thing about like one of the henchmen, it gets like run over with a steamroller or whatever.
Yes.
And there's like his like family, his wife and kids are like throwing a surprise party for him and waiting for him to come home from work.
Yeah. And it's, and like, and I think his best friend from work comes and gives them the news.
And it's Rob Lowe.
It's Rob Lowe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would then show up in Austin Powers 2 as the young number 2.
Is that right? I've only seen Austin Powers 2 and 3 once each because I didn't really like them as much.
Second one. I didn't even see the third one, but I saw the second one. I remember being Rob Lowe because he's doing a Robert Wagner impression and doing a pretty good one.
Right. Well, let me tell you about TweakedAudio.com.
Okay.
Finally, right? TweakedAudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors that look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. And I listen to, I know this feels like it's just a marketing thing more than anything else, but I listened to the soundtrack, not the score, the soundtrack to the upcoming Netflix film Bruised, Halle Berry's directorial debut. And it is a soundtrack that is entirely female rappers. And I really liked it. It was a lot of fun.
Do you think that's going to be the most notable thing about it?
I think Halle Berry's directorial debut is the most notable thing about it.
I suppose
it.
So.
I don't know. It might be good, but it seems, I mean, she's playing a boxer. I don't know. I don't know what the story is. I just know she's playing a boxer and that she directed it and stars in it. It sounded good. Now you have, we'll get back to the ad in a second. I think we've talked before, I think you have a policy that I respect that I don't follow myself when it comes to scores, that you don't like to listen to a movie's score before you've seen the movie.
Correct.
You want to hear it in the movie first. So even though like,
yes,
cause we were talking about like
meant to be heard,
the Spencer score is out. Now the Power of the Dog score is out. Right. I've been listening to them. They're great. But you are waiting till you've seen those movies to listen. What about a soundtrack album though?
It's tough. Cause I mean, all those songs are pre-existing.
I don't know if they are. I mean, at least the Cardi B song is a is definitely from this. I don't know if the whole, I should look into this. It might have been a thing where they like commissioned all of these songs from these female rappers.
If that's the case, I'd probably hold off. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available. What did I say? They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Tyler?
Yes?
Let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's give these slobs...
Oh, get off my golf course. That's what I say.
Yeah, some education.
All right.
Let's deign to bestow some of our hard-earned wisdom and erudition on these motherfuckers.
Well, first off, as someone who has a master's degree in cinema and media studies, I think maybe you
should... cinema and media studies?
Oh, I wish. That would be so, I can't wait to go to class. I've gained so much weight. So here's okay. So we're talking about snobbishness and the concept of gatekeeping,
The two things together.
Correct. Yeah. I do want to discuss the possible difference between the two of them, because I think there is. And here's where this came about. I'm going to tell you a dumb story that happened to me this last week. And this is what started this as a possible topic. I was, so Jen and I have this, program, it's called Beachbody, where you can like work out at home. And, I stepped away from it for a while. And cause I don't know, it's somehow for me, it's harder to do that than go to the gym. Cause at home is the same reason that it's hard for me to work at home, because there's so many distractions and that kind of, and other things that I have to do. But anyway, so I started it again, and it's been very effective for me in the past, even though I hate every moment of it, as I do with any kind of workout. And I've done this particular workout before, and the host, whatever you want to say, it's always this one person with like a bunch of people behind her.
I know the format.
Okay, all right. Yeah. But I don't know if host is the trainer.
No, yeah, I don't know what
you call it. Anyway, so
yeah, what would you call? Yeah, let's stay with host.
Yeah. So, you know, there's like banter going on, and it's pretty inane for the most part, and you just kind of get used to it. And after a while, you're like, you know what? I'm going to try and be positive, like they are. And then there came this moment. I'm not happy with what I'm about to say. Okay.
Okay.
I condemn myself for what I'm about to say.
Okay.
So there came a moment where the host said something and accidentally rhymed, which then led one of the other people to say, stop that rhyming. I mean it. And then she said, and said it like it was a big reveal. She goes, anybody want a peanut? Uh-huh. And other people said it along with her. To which she said, she goes, oh, you know the line. And then she looks at the camera and she goes, it's a movie reference. To which I, out loud, look, I'm working out. I'm already in a bad mood.
Yeah.
I out loud went on a tirade that I didn't write ahead of time. Uh-huh. It all just came out so naturally. Out loud, alone.
Yeah.
It's a movie reference, to which I say, oh, is it? And then I said, I think what you mean, Autumn, I shouldn't have said her name. I think what you mean, Autumn, is it's the movie reference. The one movie that everybody in the fucking world has seen. And you think that you're doing some deep cut here. And I just got totally irrationally mad.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I'm like, That is everything I've just said and the feeling. Granted, again, I was working out.
Yeah.
And I already feel tremendously inferior to the people I'm seeing on screen. But in this one moment, and it happens every once in a while, and I'm not proud of it. I just have this little surge of someone says something again that's a movie reference, and it's the most obvious thing anybody who's seen the film, maybe even once, will recognize it. And it's Princess Bride, obviously, which is a very well-known and beloved film, and I'll talk about Princess Bride again later. And so I just realized, like, oh, I just had this little stab of superiority, this little stab of snobbishness. And
do you remember, I talked about this years ago on the podcast. I had not yet seen Anton Corbijn's The American.
I thought about your American Story.
Yeah, that I have since seen it and I liked it.
Yeah.
But I overheard a coworker telling another coworker she'd seen it the previous weekend, and I could tell, like, I'm not saying whether or not the movie's good, but I can tell that you're wrong about it because I could tell that she was just like, I thought we were going to see, like, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a fun George Clooney movie from that. When's the last time George Clooney made a fun movie?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
He's got 10. I was going to say One Fine Day, but like that's
The Peacemaker.
The Peacemaker. Yeah, these are both like would have both been over a decade.
I mean, Ocean's 11
at this point. Yeah, yeah. I could just tell, like, and then I told that story on the podcast as a way of kind of admonishing myself, and certain listeners didn't get that I was being self-effacing when I told
still
the story.
Think those listeners are wrong, by the way. Like, if you. And it's funny because, like, once you and I'd settled on this topic today, sorry if this is weird. I have most of my best podcast thoughts when I'm taking a shower. In fact, I have most of my best thoughts when I'm taking a shower.
That's where it happens.
And I thought, like, oh, you know what? I wonder if it's like, I remember when Dave was talking about a coworker seeing The American. So I literally thought of that story today because I do think that, like, yes, the attitude of, you're looking at this wrong. I think that might be an inherently snobbish attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think I probably said this even at the time, because I think I might have defended you to yourself, which is, if there's somebody who goes to see a football game and they judge the game entirely on the uniforms, and then you say, like, well, that's the wrong way to approach a football game. And someone's like, did you watch that game? It's like, well, slow down. Just they need a paradigm shift in order to approach this maybe the way it's meant to be approached. But I recognize that this is art, and people, you know, you can approach art however you want, and that's perfectly fine. But that doesn't stop me from having that initial reaction that I might, even in the moment, condemn.
And I think that's kind of the reason that I wanted to make sure up top that we're not conflating snobbishness and gatekeeping as, like, synonyms.
Yes.
Is that snobbishness can be annoying. It can be boorish.
Yeah. It can also be kind of fun sometimes and funny.
There's also sometimes, I think, a place for it, a place to, like, understand that it comes from a familiarity and expertise.
Right.
You know, like, there's a line when you have to walk where you say, like, okay, yes, it is okay that I've seen more, you know, Romanian New Wave films or whatever than another person. Or it's okay that the other person hasn't seen as many, but also when the topic comes up, I have more.
Right.
It doesn't, like, it's not, there are two sides to every story, but not, those two sides aren't always of equal worth. It's all situational, you know? Yeah, I'm trying to, like, not get into, like, politics, because I think this that sort of, like, everything's equally valid has kind of, like, taken over some political discourse too. Or
I'll,
like,
get into it if you want.
Well, like, we need to. I think there's been a dismantling in general of the respect for expertise and like recognizing that expertise comes from work. Like, I wasn't I wasn't born knowing more about movies than the person in the street.
Right.
I spent a lot of time doing that. And I think that when we're talking about movies, that's worth something. If I'm talking about, you know, I never learned, despite my dad being a mechanic, I never really learned how car engines work and how to fix cars beyond the, sort of the most basic, you know, I can change a tire. I can change my oil, but I don't because it's cheap to get someone to change your oil and there's no place to do it.
Today, this was a big deal for me. Jen had driven my car a couple days ago and left the interior light on.
Oh.
And so my car wouldn't start in the garage. And I, all by myself, David, I got the jumper cables. I connected her engine to my engine and got the car started and everything's going great. That's a big deal for me.
Okay. Yeah. That is the base level thing you can do. Yeah.
I didn't ask for help or nothing.
But what I'm saying is in a different situation, if we're talking about like what's wrong with the car, and the person who knows about cars is saying you need to have two of your oxygen sensors replaced, I'm not going to say, what do you like? Don't tell me what to do. What are you such a snob? Yeah. That person has earned that.
Right.
And so there's a place for acknowledging that one person has an opinion on a certain subject that is more valid than the opinion of someone who doesn't have the expertise.
And I definitely, you know, to get slightly political, because I'm in the world of academia now, and, or, you know, I teach at community college, so I'll take it.
Cinnamon media.
Cinnamon,
studies.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I know about cinnamon. Yeah. Cinnamon, damn it.
Cinnamon media studies is specifically about Cinnamon Toast Crunch commercials, right?
Oh yeah. There used to be the three chefs and then they just went to the one and then they got rid of, his name was Wendell, and then they got rid of him.
You did take cinnamon media studies.
There is, you know, the attitude about certain, you know, when talking about film history, I've read about certain situations where students take issue with a professor talking about like all these white directors, and it's like, oh yeah, okay, I get that, but if you want to incorporate more like early female directors, directors of color, like if you want to incorporate that, I'm in favor of that, but at the exclusion of like Hitchcock. It's like, it can be both.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be one or the other.
You're doing a disservice if you're not talking about Howard Hawks or whatever, but yes, you should also be talking. Yeah.
And that's something that like
about Lois Weber and people like that. Yeah.
And that's something that's like, yeah, the professor. Now, if a professor is really digs in his heels and says like, well, no, we're only going to talk about this or that. I guess it depends on what the class is, but at the same time, then that's not helpful either. But like the professor probably knows more than the students on this, and all they know is what they're bringing, what they think it should be, without any real knowledge of that history. And so that's kind of, and that's definitely where I'm teaching a diversity in cinema class, in cinnamon class, all the different kinds of cinnamon. it's the best. And so I really, the textbook kind of forces me to acknowledge like different contributors throughout film. But, and I found that very,
isn't that fun? Like,
I say force, like it's exciting for me to be able to talk about that.
No, and I know what you mean by force. That's why I like things like when we do the profiles, because it forces me in a good way to watch something I wouldn't otherwise have watched.
I still stress out about it and, hate myself, for the idea of, why didn't I just arrive having seen all these movies just on principle? Why haven't I seen everything?
Yeah. Oh, that's, I'm always like that. Yeah. Why haven't I seen everything?
But yeah, anyway, so I do think, yes, I agree with you. I think that there are, there is such a thing as, you know what? Not even necessarily the idea of, oh, this person's seen everything. Not everything, obviously, but you talked about like Romanian New Wave. I think it's entirely possible that you could talk to somebody who has seen more of it than you have, but their attitude and their approach is so very wrong. Like, I do know people who consider themselves like movie buffs and movie lovers, but the way they approach film is as superficial as you can get. And they've seen more movies than I have, and yet somehow they just,
yeah,
they're not inquisitive. They're not curious.
That does get into, like, I don't know if that's gatekeeping, but that you do risk the bad kind of snobbishness there, where you're saying, like, my way of thinking about a movie is
exactly
is more valid. But I do, as both a movie lover and a music lover, I am not even dismayed. I'm more fascinated by that type of fan. Like, I mean, this is going to date me about talking about, like, the radio and top 40 or whatever, which I don't know, people even thinking, young people don't even think about those things anymore. But yeah, like, I've known multiple people who are clearly passionate about music, but it never occurred to them to listen to music beyond the top 40.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that impulse. I am more fascinated by it than I am dismayed by it, like I said. But it's the same thing with movies. But I think what I sometimes have to remember when I think that way, when I think, I mean, in all honesty, it comes up sometimes between us, mm-hmm. where, like, you know, I'll be talking about a movie that I'm very excited about and that you have no interest in.
Yeah.
It probably happens the other way around. Where I'm like, oh, why isn't he interested in this? But what I have to remember is I also have I draw lines at certain places. There right. is a certain place where there are parts of cinema where I'm just like, I'm not going there.
I feel like I try to be interested in everything. Is there stuff that I'm dismissive of, or no, maybe it's not the same thing?
I guess it's more, I have to remind myself that you, like, especially now that you, like, have children or whatever, like, you don't have the time to watch anything.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it came up on, we do so many of these episodes. I don't know if it was a journal, if it was a Patreon, if it was this, when I pointed out, like, that you've spent 6.5 hours watching Zack Snyder movies in 2021, and I'm like, but you didn't see, I don't know, I'm trying to think of stuff, like, you didn't go see The Souvenir Part 2 or whatever. Right. That stuff sometimes, again, it more flabbergasts me than anything, but I have to remember, I also draw a line in certain places.
Yeah, and in that case, and I think I mentioned it as well, that, like, there is this weird impulse in me because we do the podcast. Not that I think our listeners are that interested in Army of the Dead, but for whatever reason, I feel like, well, one of us should have at least seen this shit. And
I don't know. I would love to hear from the listeners. Like, we did forever ago, we did, like, a one of those survey things, like, tell us who you are. And that was in terms of, like, demographics, and that was, like, for advertising purposes or whatever. But I'd love to have a survey of, like, what movies do you like us to talk about? Because I think maybe this is narcissistic of me, but I tend to just project, like, that the listeners are interested in the things that I'm listening to.
Yeah.
Or I'm interested in listening to, but, I'd love to hear, are you tuning in? Because I think about it. I know we have listeners who disagree with us most of the time and yet still listen.
Good Lord.
But they like us.
Sure.
That's fun. I think, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess we should try to put together a survey that, like, gives us an impression of our listeners, like, taste in movies.
And I do think that's, you know, in this case, again, this is a situation, maybe I'm just trying to justify myself, but it's this idea of, like, I know that you have certain things covered, you know, maybe, like, art house, whatever you want to say. And it's like, and I'm also interested in that stuff, but I feel like, but if I go and see the new bullshit Venom movie, then between the two of us, we've kind of got everything. And but we have a similar sensibility as far as what we look for.
That's
so feel like I'm filling in the gaps that, incidentally, everybody else, you know, they're not gaps for everyone else. For us, they are.
I think what you're talking about is, I think you have stayed closer to the Battleship Retention mission statement than I have.
Do we have a mission statement?
Not really, but okay. I think that sort of, like, we're going to talk about every different kind of movie, and I'll take them all equally seriously and respect them. Like, I think I have over the years gotten away from that, where like I was at a thing yesterday with a bunch of different other film critics and a lot of, you know, people who cover different stuff. Mm-hmm. And someone asked me, this is going to sound like a total snob, so this is going to
At least you were talking to an actual person.
Yeah, but this is my thought. I didn't say this.
Okay.
My thought is going to be something worse than the American thing. Someone asked me, have you seen Red Notice yet? And I was like, in my head, I was like, is that a joke? I was never going to watch Red Notice. Yeah. That's not like, it doesn't feel like a real movie to me, but that's snobbishness.
That is definitely something I have run across. And I guess this is where, because I feel like my sensibilities are more mainstream, are geared more towards the mainstream than yours. I always feel that until I talk to like a normie, as I call them. And it's that thing. It's like, oh, I can't even give an example, but like every class I will start off by asking my students like, oh, what have you seen lately? And they'll mention like, oh, they saw whatever the most recent, like sort of big movie, whether it be streaming or whatever, they saw that. And then, and I don't make fun of them for it. And I just, it's like, oh, I didn't see it. How was it? And what's more is like, in my mind, it's not, I don't think about it in the moment, but it's more like, oh, I was never going to see that.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see it. I'm never going to see it unless you give the most, like, unless you say it changed your life or something like that. Maybe I'll give it a second thought.
I don't know, if Ryan Reynolds dies,
sure,
and we do a profile, maybe I'll watch.
Even then, that's a maybe. He's made a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's true. But there are some Robert Forster movies that I watched when we did that I was like, oh man, I never would have seen this movie otherwise. Yeah. And sometimes in good ways, and sometimes, and I probably could have gone on not seeing that movie. It would have been fine.
Even when they're bad, like, you're grateful that you saw them.
Yeah.
in that way. And so, yeah, I do think of. And the other thing that obviously the best way to fight snobbishness in ourselves and if listeners, if you find yourselves kind of heading in this direction, humility and recognizing your own limitations. I have giant blind spots. It's silly of me to look at somebody who cites, you know, when someone says, oh, Princess Bride or a favorite of ours, Back to the Future is my favorite movie. My first thought is like, yeah, you've probably seen 150 in your life. And you probably just cycle through those. Like, I think that, and I'm like, oh, that's a very ugly thought, because it's such a, it to me is such a generic answer. But then I realized like, there are so many people that know more than I do and think deeper than I do. I mean, when I went back to school, I definitely felt like I'm part of this master's program with people that are solidly 10 years younger than I am. And they seem to have known, they seem to have seen more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I feel like, of course I felt like a fraud, but that's not new. But I definitely felt like, well, this, I should be, just cause they're younger doesn't mean I can't learn something from them. So here we go. And I think that, recognizing your own limitations, not in a self-hating or even a self-deprecating way, just recognizing you have blind spots that for other people are the most, it's the most obvious thing in the world. How could you have not seen such and such a movie or this entire genre or whatever it is? In which case, like, yeah. And I think that'll keep you from getting overly snobbish.
Yeah.
Even with like the most mainstream superficial, attitude.
I mean, my thing with those kind of people, the people who are my age or younger, who are clearly know more about movies and think deeper and are more intellectual about movies, I usually try to remind myself, David, you have almost certainly had more sex than that person.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing to cling to. Yeah. And the other thing is just like, it's like, yeah, but you know what? I'm wiser. It's like, I don't know if I am. I'm still kind of a mess.
No, but the sex thing is like a joke, but it does. I do say like, I am a person who has had a weird but very active social life for a long time. Like, so yes. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of like Jacques Becker films that I haven't seen or whatever. I haven't seen Touche Pas Grisby. That's like supposed to be really great or whatever. But also like I've spent a lot of time, like fun times drinking at bars with people.
Yeah.
And like I've had, that's been enriching in its own way. So, but that's the thing you also have to remind, like we keep saying, like, I can be snobbish about movies, maybe a tad about music. I don't know. But there's always the recognition that when it comes to other things, I am the opposite. Like there, like is snobbishness should be like situational.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, hopefully. And I think, you know, what came out in that moment with, you know, when I was alone, no one was doing anything at me. I definitely probably, I know it sounds so weird, but because I was in a situation that is so foreign to me, which is exercise.
Mm. You wanted to assert your like
apparently
dominance. Yeah, no, I get
it,
that.
It was almost, again, with no one that was actually there, but it was more this idea. It was like, hey, I've come into your world. I'm a fat slob who doesn't do this. You clearly, like, I'm already here, but for this moment, you've dipped a toe into my world, and you'll find that the water is very cold, as you know. And so, yeah, I do think that, and the other way that snobbishness in the end, it usually comes out for me in people just sort of stopping at a certain point and not being more inquisitive. And that probably is a gatekeeping attitude. Like, well, this is the way to approach art. Now I do still kind of think that that's true, it's hard not to get prescriptive about that sort of thing though. And then how deep is deep enough? That's the,
I don't think there is such a thing.
Right.
Like, I think, I mean, I,
I mean is deep enough going the other way. Like, how deep do you have to think for someone to say you're thinking you're acceptable?
Wait, sorry. Who's the person A and person B in that situation? So I'm like, losing track.
So if you say, oh, I think deeply about movies, and then you start to talk about movies, and then I'm like, he's not thinking deeply enough. As opposed to too deep. No, I don't think you can ever go too deep.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, that's my thing. Is I try to learn something about the world every day. Like, and I don't like feel like, oh, because I got a degree, that means I have a degree in film or whatever. You have a master's. Like, there's no point that you're. Yeah. Done with it. But I think we've gotten away from the topic of
that wonderful bit in The Wizard of Oz where the Scarecrow just wants a brain and he goes, he's like, oh, I have something just as good. It's a diploma. that movie is more, has more moments of cynicism than you
think. I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
It holds up and not only does it hold up, but like it gets so much better.
I'm sure it does.
You
know what? You know what else I haven't seen since I was a kid? And I'm like, I haven't seen Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters 2, but I don't think people like Ghostbusters 2 anymore. I don't know if they ever did.
I liked it when I was young, but that's because it was just more Ghostbusters.
But I guess all this talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife has gotten me thinking like, because I've been saying like, oh, they shouldn't be making this like warm nostalgia piece. That's not what Ghostbusters is. But I'm like, then I'm like, calm down on like what Ghostbusters is. You haven't seen it in 30 years.
I will say that's not what Ghostbusters is. Quite the opposite. Ghostbusters, like it goes back to that movie, the comedy, which is like world's about to end. Damn it, Bill Murray, can you take anything seriously?
Yeah.
Like after a certain point, you're like, I don't know if anybody would be friends with this man.
Yeah.
So to me, like, okay. So as I've mentioned before, I'm part of various Facebook groups. I kind of have to be because of just what I do elsewhere. So like I'm part of various like Christian Facebook, Christian film fans, film fans that are Christian, not merely fans of Christian film. I don't think I'm part of any of those. And this is when I really feel my snobbishness come out, is when there is, I guess it's that idea of dismissal, which is a dismissal of people who would claim to be, and there it is, who would say they're film fans, but you know, you bring up Last Temptation of Christ, and they'll say I haven't seen it. I won't see it. I know it's blasphemous. I know it's this. And they're judging it first off, purely off, based on like what they've heard. And it's like, well, we all judge a movie based on, what we've heard. But in this case, they're saying like, oh, this is blasphemous and evil. And like, okay. I feel like you probably should see it for yourself if you're going to be saying that kind of thing, in my opinion.
So this isn't what I was doing with Red Notice. I'm not guilty of the same thing with Red Notice.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, and like that's when it's like, I guess you could call me a snob, but it's like you're not approaching this the right way. Like, you're looking for a movie that just serves up the Jesus that you already have an idea of. And incidentally, the first thing in Last Temptation of Christ is text on the screen saying this is not based on the Bible. Like, and thankfully other people actually show that.
Yeah.
And to me it's like that kind of inoculates the film from anything, from any kind of religious criticism. It's essentially approaching Jesus as purely as a character, one that we're all kind of familiar with. And then that's it.
Is it, I mean,
but that's too much for some people.
Is it blasphemous to do that?
In my opinion, no. Especially if it comes out of a real desire to understand him. You know what I mean? Like, you may veer off in this direction or that, but also to say like, this is a thought experiment.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long provided, and of course there's the caveat there, provided it's done with sincerity.
Yeah. Fiction, somewhat counterintuitively, can really help us understand the world. That's something
I've said of course. Before.
It's something I said that weirdly, like that movie Deep Murder is like about in some ways.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The idea that fiction can help us grow. Anyway, we should pivot into talking about gatekeeping and how that's and how that's different, because I think the line you have to walk of like acknowledging like where snobbishness of a certain point is earned and actually can help, but at what point, once you get to the point where your snobbishness is discouraging people from following that curiosity, right, from learning more, then you've turned into a gatekeeper and you're doing a disservice. You're essentially trying to like pull up the ladder behind you. And that's the kind of shit that's going to lead. I mean, cinema is already dying, if not dead. But like, that's the kind of shit that's going to kill it all the faster and turn it into something like that's just a fine art only appreciated by the few who can have the time and money to invest in it, like to discourage people from wanting to learn about movies is the worst kind of snobbishness, because it's a poison snobbishness to movies themselves.
Do you think, and just for the record, I feel like we've said this already, but like when we have these moments of snobbishness in ourselves, because I do think that you can't help but fall into that from time to time. We're not happy with them. We're not saying like, oh, this is how it is. It's just acknowledging that this could be a podcast devoted to anything else, and you'd find snobbishness there as well.
Yeah. I had another to keep just airing things I feel bad about. And this one's actually kind of public. I don't know if anyone saw it. It was on my Instagram account, which I don't ever talk about my Instagram because it's not a Battleship Retention account. It's just me. I'm not going to follow you if you're a listener, like just a listener. Right. Like, it's my friends. But I posted like way back in May when like the first time I went back to the movies, I posted a picture of me and my wife at the Arrow, like, hey, we're actually seeing a movie or whatever. And someone who listens to the show, by the way, our friend Josh, commented, are you seeing F9? Because that's what was out. Mm-hmm. Now, Josh is joking because sure. he loves the Fast and the Furious movies, but he knows that I don't. So he is like kind of joking. But I was like, I just said like exactly or like something that was clearly.
Yeah.
And then I got into my head the idea of someone not knowing that me and Josh like know yeah. each other and like ribbing each other, like the like someone stumbling upon that post and seeing someone say, are you seeing F9? And me being like, uh-huh, sure. Like,
sure.
That makes me come across as a snob, but I guess social media is often having private conversations publicly.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying. Like, there's definitely been times when, like, I start the beginning of every semester saying, I come out of the world of film criticism. I'm going to try not to throw my opinions out there whenever you're talking about a movie you love. Like, I will try not to do that.
Yeah.
And if it happens anyway, I'm sorry in advance. Do please let me know if I've offended you, because it stifles conversation.
Yeah.
That dismissal of, oh, I would never see that kind of thing. Now I know that you and Josh were having a joke with each other, which is fine. But yeah, somebody who I picture, I don't know why, I picture like this young kid who's just a fan of BP. I don't know why I'm picturing this like Dickensian street urchin.
I don't think we have any listeners under like 28, maybe.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being like, oh, what's Dave? Oh, David's at the Arrow. That's good. Oh, and they're like big Fast and Furious fans. Like that's what I picture. And of course that's an extreme, ridiculous image. Yeah. But at its core is in this fake person's mind,
yeah.
a dismissal of something that they probably find a tremendous value in.
Yeah. I'm clearly like in the wrong for not watching the Fast and Furious movies. Like,
I've still never seen a single one.
I've at least seen the first one, which no one talks about as being one of the good ones.
Yeah.
But like people whose like opinions I respect, love Fast and the Furious movies, love Mad Max Fury Road, like all these things that I just have never been able to muster up any interest in seeing.
It occurs to me. Yeah. So I did want to say, like, when we talk about snobbishness, it's more just like we're confessing snobbishness, the way one confesses a sin, because sometimes just saying this is a thing that I do, is, I think it can be good and humbling in itself. My question, have you ever, in your opinion, said something or even had a thought that you would classify as sort of a gatekeeping attitude?
I'm sure I did when I was younger.
Sure.
I was, because I was so often, especially with music, I think I was so in my head. I'd actually talked about this on a Patreon episode that I don't think has aired yet. That I was like slower to come around to embracing like pop music,
mm-hmm.
even though I liked, like, I never, when I was in college, I never had any problem saying like, I like the Barbarian Invasions and sure. I loved Looney Tunes Back in Action. Those two things were not like, I had no problem saying it, but when it came to music, I was much more keeping pop music at arm's length. So I probably was, there, I can tell you a specific example that someone called me out on that I almost wish this person were here, because it was like in my face and attitude, so I didn't even know how to say it. But I was with my girlfriend at the time outside of the music box in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the music box, for those who don't know, has one big theater and then it has a little small theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the big theater was showing Coffee and Cigarettes.
Okay.
And the small theater was showing The Saddest Music in the World.
Mm.
And my friend Seth like shows up and he's like, oh, you here to see Coffee and Cigarettes too? And something about my attitude of like, no, we're seeing Saddest Music in the World. He, like, the next day, because we worked together, the next day he was like, why'd you have to be a dick about me seeing Coffee and Cigarettes? Because I'd probably already seen it at that point, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's old news. I'm seeing the new guy, Madden. as if, like, Jim Jarmusch is some, like, mainstream thing.
Right.
But I probably did have that, like... that's old news, like, type of thing. Because I still get in my, like, I still have to check myself. Scott and I kind of did some tangential, like, screener gloating last week. But I'm very, I tried to check myself about the fact that I get to see things early. Because I do still get, it's shameful, but I get a little charge out of the fact that I've seen something before it's been released, you know? And I sometimes will do the thing of, like, because I've been doing the, like, film critic thing for 10 years. I mean, we've been doing the podcast since 2007, but it was 2011 when we started, like, reaching out to publicists and getting invited to screening. So it's been, like, it's been over 10 years of this. And I have found myself usually around this time, there'll be some movie that I'm like, oh, I can't believe I still haven't seen Licorice Pizza. Where it's like, that movie's not out yet.
Yeah.
But I feel like all my friends have seen Licorice Pizza. Everyone I know has seen Licorice Pizza. And I need to, like, align my priorities a little bit.
And it's, to me, it's pretty much a guarantee that you're still going to see Licorice Pizza before the masses.
I've already got a screening schedule.
Okay, yeah.
To
the degree that the masses are going to see Licorice Pizza, I don't know if it's the kind that, if it's going to get, like, a wide release. I've lost all perspective on that kind of
thing.
It's
being put out by United Artists Releasing, which did House of Gucci. Like, so I'm expecting something on that level. But then again, it doesn't have star, like, House of Gucci has Lady Gaga and Adam Driver. Licorice Pizza, like, there's not as many Chaim fans. I forgot what I was gonna say, but I will see Licorice Pizza, or Lick P as the kids are calling it, before Thanksgiving, and it doesn't come out till Christmas. It's wide release is until Christmas.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I like the idea. I think the novelty of seeing something early.
I just really made myself laugh with the Lick P thing.
I know. I could see in your eyes. You hadn't smiled yet. And I was like, this is coming. He's slow to catch on to how ridiculous this thing he just said is. But yeah, I think the novelty of seeing something early has not worn off for me. Early and free, which is very exciting. But the idea of thinking myself, usually I'm frustrated that I've seen it before everyone else, because like with Cyrano, I love it so much. There's like, I can't talk about it with anyone.
Oh yeah. I get that. Yeah.
That, like, really bums me out.
Yeah.
Or if I see a movie that I did not like House of Gucci, then yeah, you haven't seen it yet. And I don't think I'm better than you. If anything, I'm just like, oh, good Lord, I hope he doesn't like it, because I really want to bond with him over not liking it.
Man, this is going off on a tangent, but Ridley Scott, I don't know, when I go into one of his movies, I don't know if I'm going to like it or not.
Because
I mean, All the Money in the World, I thought was like, his craft is undeniable, but I thought the movie was like an endurance test. And so I kind of went into Last Duel with the same, and The Last Duel is so much fun to me, that now I'm looking forward to House of Gucci more than I was because I liked The Last Duel.
I'll save that for the movie journal eventually. Yeah. I have no doubt that I have adopted a gatekeeper attitude, but I'm trying to think in what capacity. Because it's not to discourage people from seeing movies, but it's probably been this idea of, you don't deserve an opinion because you don't think of movies the way I do. You haven't seen what I've seen. I think that I've gotten away from that attitude. I think it's very standard when you're younger, and you're looking for a way to stand out from other people. And it's like, oh, well, I've seen this and this. And by the way, I cannot think of a more delightful story than it's like, yeah, seeing Jim Jarmusch, you might as well be seeing a fucking Roland Emmerich film.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, which is true when you incorporate Guy Madden.
Yeah, yeah. But compared to Guy Madden, it is mainstream entertainment.
And incidentally, I think I saw Coffee and Cigarettes at the Music Box, and then I saw Saddest Music in the World on DVD. So I'm part of the problem, Dave.
I guess so, yeah. Of course,
the fact that, and this is where, I don't know, this might be snobbishness, the idea that they're like, well, look, eventually you're going to see Saddest Music in the World. Did you see it in the theater? Did you see it on DVD? Yeah. Oh, DVD? Oh, what are you, some kind of plebe?
Yeah.
But, so.
Oh, shit, I had something I was going to say about that.
I'm sorry.
No, it was about, oh, shit, never mind. Ignore me.
Done.
definitely thought I had something, but it's gone now.
Okay. It'll probably come up in a minute, but we should wrap up. So it's more just, maybe this is just my own way of,
oh yes. I remember what I was going to say.
All right.
Yes.
I was kind of vamping until it showed up.
Because I read, in fact, I like saved it to my phone. He used to be one of the editors of the Village Voice, Alan Scherstel. I follow him on Twitter. He's a really great film critic. And he, like, a while back, like, made public his sort of, like, personal rules for what he doesn't allow as an editor or doesn't allow as an editor. And there's some really interesting things that I hadn't thought of. And one of them, and I'm never sure whether or not I'm threading this needle when I'm writing a movie review, but the idea of, like, if you're going to, in reviewing one movie, reference another movie that might be older or more obscure than the movie you're reviewing, you should do it in a way where the potential reader who doesn't know what that movie is would be encouraged to seek it out, as opposed to made to feel dumb for not knowing what it is.
Absolutely.
And that's something I think about a lot. Like, am I talking about this, you know, obscure, like, or if like you're writing about a filmmaker who's like been around for a while planning festival favorites and they finally has one that's like really breaking through, and if I'm gonna like reference their earlier works, I don't want to write it as if I'm like saying you should have already seen these, like, you should be familiar with their early albums. You didn't listen to REM until A Lot of Time and Automatic for the People. You gotta go, like, that sort of attitude. I try to be careful about, like, am I encouraging people to potentially learn more about movies as opposed to discouraging?
Because it's still, I don't think I'm certainly not the first person to say this, but I remember a few years ago, I was at the International Christian Film Festival. I was giving a talk called Everybody Hates Critics. and essentially talking about, like, the need for a critic and the importance of the critic, but also saying, like, in the end, it's the reason that people get frustrated with critics is because we have this attitude, which makes a review so much more about us and our take. And that might happen sort of by default, but to steer into it, to sort of be sort of the Anton Ego from Ratatouille.
Oh yeah.
Where it's much more about, do I give this my stamp of approval, as opposed to, yeah, it disappointed me, but maybe the next one will be better, or this disappointed me, but hey, if you're looking to see something, and why wouldn't you? You should see this, which is similar but better, in my opinion. Like, one, it stops at you. And the other, you're really just like a guidepost.
Yeah.
Someone stops at you to see where they should go, and you say, oh, go that way. As opposed to just like a dead end, to keep the metaphor going.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think in the end, like, art in general should just be like celebrated, even when you're giving something a negative review, like, as opposed to just shaming artists or audience or other critics or whatever it is. I don't know. I think about the movie Ed Wood, and it's like the fact that Tim Burton could look at Ed Wood, who made horrible movies, and find inspiration
yeah.
from from that and that love of film and that enthusiasm, like that can be sort of an inspiration to us all.
Yeah.
That someone who has, you know, what we might think of as a superficial take on a movie, you could still learn something from that because, oh, I never thought of that before. And really embracing that, that can be a really exciting moment if you're open to it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good place to wrap it up, I think.
Sure.
You can find us at battleshippretension.com, where you can find AFI movie reviews, AFI Fest movie reviews, and stuff. You can email us at david@battleshippretension.com or tyler@battleshippretension.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter @DavyPretension. Also check out my other podcast. It's called The One Where I Met Your Mother. My wife Natalie and I every week watch an episode of Friends and an episode of How I Met Your Mother. We're watching them concurrently. We're about to start season two. Actually, we're recording this episode early, so by the time you're hearing this, yes, the most recent episode of The One Where I Met Your Mother is season two, episode one. So we'll watch season two, episode one of Friends and season two, episode one of How I Met Your Mother, discuss them individually, compare and contrast, and also do a bunch of other silly shit. Like,
sure.
We talk about what was happening, what the top five songs in the U.S. were the day that that each episode initially aired. Talk about coming across as snobs.
I was literally about to ask a snobbish question, which is like, did that conversation depress you at all?
No, I mean, sometimes I think it's fun to be like, oh yeah, I remember that song. But then it's like, we were at the second half of How I Met Your Mother season one was the chart dominance of the song Bad Day by Daniel Powder. Do you know that song? Because you had a bad day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I hate that song. So it was just like, every week, here's the part where I scoff at Bad Day by Daniel Powder. So yeah, talk about some snobbishness there. But it's mostly a fun podcast, I promise. It's not just like talking shit. But that's at wherever you find podcasts, but also at battleshippretension.com. Find Tyler on Twitter @TylerPretension. Tyler, do you have anything to plug this week?
Still pushing my my documentary, Valley of the Shadow, The Spiritual Value of Horror, which is available for rent on Vimeo, but you can also find it on the Rediscover Television streaming platform.
I was almost gonna ask, like, why'd you have to release that right before like all the end of the year, like, and I was like, all right, Halloween. Like, that's why. So yeah, I still haven't watched Valley of the Shadow because it's that time of year where I have to watch everything.
You know, I'll say this, we've been submitting the film to a bunch of film festivals, and it's been accepted to several horror festivals, which is very exciting.
Is exciting. Yeah.
And you know, David, I don't brag about myself very often, and I guess this isn't so much a brag as it is just like a really pleasant surprise. In one of the horror festivals where they have like awards, mm-hmm. it was nominated for editing. And we didn't submit it in that category.
Yeah.
It was up for a documentary as well.
But you were the editor, right?
I was the editor.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and I'm incidentally not an editor.
Yeah.
But it made me feel really good. I really,
that's,
I don't know.
Great.
I wanted to like say, I wanted to like send them an email and say, thank you. That's really nice of you. It's like, yeah, I guess that's the idea.
Yeah, that is nice. This isn't like when you and I used to get nominated for podcast awards and then used the opportunity to talk shit about what a farce the podcast awards were.
Yes, that's true. And you know, some of the festivals that we're sending the film to are very, very small. Not to suggest that they shouldn't be taken seriously, but they're very small. And this was one of the smaller horror festivals. But still, it's like, oh, they thought the editing was good enough to nominate it in a narrative category, which I was very excited for. So if you want to see this brilliantly edited, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. So it's not like it's been edited down.
Right.
It's just been edited. But if you want to see that, you can find that, you can rent that, on Vimeo. So, and then there will be sometime soon, hopefully in the next week or two, there will be a More Than One Lesson episode about Ford v. Ferrari with the companion film Chef. And by putting those two together, you can probably see where I'm headed already as far as that episode. But anyway.
All right. Other than that, thanks for listening.
Yeah, we'll get you next time.
Bye. Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.